Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand. Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by Delahoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
God save the queen. Mike is back.
Back.
On episode 25 of the Last Round.
I think only half have been returned. I think the other half still in Vegas.
Oh, man. Do we even want another story?
No. I don't. Well, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Well, that's why. That's why I was trying to bait you there. So if you would have told our listeners, everybody, you would have committed a sin. So coming from Sin City, Las Vegas. So as I mentioned, episode 25, Mike is back. Back again. He was absent last week. And more thanks to my co-host last week who actually stepped in, Luis Mejia, boxing photographer. Follow him at El Mejia Photography, doing his thing. This is an important week. We got a very important fight on Saturday that we'll touch on later in the show, of course. But we'll start this past Saturday. Sean Porter, Ugas. It was very, very competitive. Very competitive. As I mentioned last week, I know Ugas didn't have the name, but he has the talent. He had that Cuban. These Cuban fighters, man, you know, we don't know their age and all that stuff sometimes, but they all fight the same, and they're all slick. They're all slick. Lara, Ortiz. I mean, did you catch the fight? What'd you think?
Yeah, I managed to catch the fight. I watched it whilst I was at work, actually.
What?
I think one of the problems, I think, like you just kind of touched on there with the Cuban fighters, is they seem to be so kind of skillful and slick that they kind of like just try to just win rounds. It's like they need to, in my opinion, they need to step on the gas and like convincingly take rounds, you know, pick them up, pile them up, put them in the bank. But they just seem to, you know, be kind of rely on the skill, think, you know, I've got it in the bag. There's no need for me to kind of, you know, close the show a bit. And I think that was one of the reasons that, you know, Ugas left the fight kind of so close. I didn't think it was a robbery as such. You know, a lot of people on Twitter.
That's what I was going to ask you, because the word robbery is being thrown around again.
Was it Ray Mancini who kept saying it?
Yeah. Boom, boom. Ray Mancini did say that. Did he use the word robbery, though? Because I saw him on the Fox broadcast, and he did say Ugas won the fight. He was like, I believe Ugas won the fight.
Because he was getting into it, wasn't he? He was kind of saying
he seemed very passionate behind it. So
I thought it was close, and that, you know, there's always that thing that they always say, you know, rightly or wrongly, that, you know, you need to go there and, you know, you need to really take the title from the champion. And
didn't we touch on that before?
We did. I mean, rightly or wrongly, you know, if you win, you win.
Right.
But, you know, the champ always seems to have, you know, one or two rounds in the bank.
Who did you score for? Fire.
I thought you guys probably took it by a round.
I scored at 116-112 Porter.
You did?
I did. But I had, at the first time I watched it. I want to rewatch it again, because, you know, every time there's people like, oh, Ugas got, took it. And then there was even some people out there, you know, in press row who picked Ugas. So just like, you know, maybe I should watch it again. But I had Porter winning, but there was a couple swing rounds that I thought, oh, you know what? Ugas with the body work, you know, the counters.
I read somewhere, I think it was might have been Boxing Scene, that 10 of the rounds the judges scored differently.
All three of them.
I think only one of the judges scored the 12 to Sean Porter, and they couldn't agree on 10 of the rounds. That's how close it was.
Because I think it was a split decision, obviously. Mm-hmm. Ugas had one card for 115, 113, I think.
Yeah. And then obviously there was that knockdown or phantom knockdown.
Okay, that's where I was transitioning. Okay, so that was not a knockdown.
No, at first, when I first watched
it looked like I thought it was a knockdown.
But then when you see the camera from the other side,
right?
You can see he was kind of already off balance and the punch was like, already kind of
because
going down.
Because even Ugas tweeted out after the fight, he tweeted out video of it saying, no, this was a knockdown. Jack Reese, who was the referee in that fight, you know, pretty much, I respect you, but you made a mistake. But if you look at slow-mo video of it, Sean Porter puts his guard up on his ear. And then Ugas goes for like a sweeping right hand. Mm-hmm. And he kind of just, if anything, he touches him behind the head. And it wasn't even like a great connect. If anything, like it's like their wrists kind of hit each other. And I think if you kind of slow it down, if you slow down that video, Porter at that moment puts his guard up and he's trying to like crouch down, I think, to try to maneuver out of the way. And his back right foot goes back, and I think because he's trying to use it to crouch down. But then the reason why I do rule it as that it wasn't a knockdown, that I think gives it more credibility, is because he slipped in the corner. And we know in the corner of fighters, there's all these liquids all the time. There's water and stuff like that. Yeah, they try to clean it, but sometimes that's the wettest part of the ring. And that's where he slipped. They were in the corner. I think that was his corner. So, you know, I know people are like, oh, that was a knockdown. That wasn't a knockdown. I think that was a proper call by Jack Reese.
I agree. I thought he was kind of like already going down. Like, you know, like you said, he kind of blocked the punch. I don't think the punch was the deciding factor to send him to the ground. I thought Jack Reese did well. You know, that Tyson Fury fight and then again with this one. I think plenty of referees would have seen, even though that he blocked it, they would have taken the easy way out.
Well, that's why I think.
And they'd have just given him the count.
I think it was a tough spot. Like, I mean, yeah, we're giving him credit right now. Like, you know, that was a good call. He got it right. But even if he did rule it a knockdown, I mean, in real time, I mean, that was kind of hard to really see. You really had to be at a certain angle. And I can't remember exactly where Jack Reese was standing at that moment.
He was like on the camera. He was kind of like to the left. He was kind of quite far away.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, of course he knows what angle he had, but you know, even if he got it wrong, he did rule it a knockdown.
I think the way he fell kind of gave it away a little bit.
Yeah, you see his foot. It does slide.
Just the way that, like, it was kind of unnatural the way that he went down. You know, like, if he gets, like, a big punch, you could kind of see, like, the way he'd go. And it was kind of odd, like, he had slipped or... It's just weird. You could kind of see, like, Jack Reese, to me, that would have been a deciding factor, like, the unnatural way that he kind of went down.
Right. I mean, it... Ugas, yeah, he says that if he would have got that knockdown, you know, he could have won the fight and stuff. I mean, yeah, possibly, but like I said, some people scored it for Ugas, some people scored it for Porter. You know, I liked some of the work that Ugas was doing, especially to the body. Those hooks to the body, those were nasty, and Porter was taking him. You know, Porter was taking him pretty nicely. I mean, you know, it wasn't really ever a time where either fighter was really hurt. Or at least, you know, they didn't show it. But, yeah, I think, like I said, I scored at 116-112 for Porter. I want to rewatch it again just because there's so much scrutiny. But I'm not, you know, the word robbery, like, that's not what I'm talking about here. Nope.
No. I don't think it was a robbery. I think neither fighter really put the foot down and decided, you know, to take control of the fight. I thought Porter did well. I thought he... came in with his usual Sean Porter style, just, you know, throwing a lot of punches, just trying to wing his way in. I thought Ugas, you know, did well in parts of the fight. Like, he reminds me of Lara. They have that very, you know, traditional Cuban style.
Absolutely.
Where I kept thinking to myself, like, he's got the skills to kind of, you know, take control of the fight, but he kind of just wanted to, like, stay ahead instead of, like, I've already kind of said, you know, put his foot down and be like, you know what, I'm doing well here with the body work and, you know, I'm kind of staying on the outside and, you know, trying to stop Porter coming in. And I kept thinking to myself, just keep doing it, you know, just keep doing it and just keep, you know, trying to take the rounds. But I don't know, he just didn't seem to want to do it. It's kind of like an odd style that I think he could have taken that, you know, quite convincingly and, you know, won the WBC championship and got onto bigger and better things. So I think looking back at it, if I was him, I'd be kind of, you know, disappointed, really.
I think Porter was disappointed.
Yeah,
because I mean, even at the end when they were about to announce the winner, you can see him kind of prepping himself, like, you know, based on his body language, like, you know, man, I think I could have, like, that's a possibility he could lose. Because even when they said he won, yeah, it wasn't like he showed emotion. He just kind of raised his hands and kind of kept a straight face. Like, but you can see leading up to that announcement that in his mind, he was kind of prepping himself like, yeah, you know what? I think I might have lost. You know, I mean, it was a close fight. I could see it why some people scored for Ugas. I can see it for some people scored for Porter. Some people are, you know, because you have the luxury of watching it on television, you can see, you know, the landed punches on the screen. Like, oh, yeah. And yeah, Porter did outland him, but not by much. And so people are like, oh, you know, he outlanded him. That's why he should win. Like, no, not necessarily.
Ugas was definitely, I thought, the cleaner work. You know, Porter kind of comes in.
Porter was taking it to him, though, because there was times where, like, they were just kind of staring at each other. Ugas was literally waiting for him to jump in there so he can counter him. And I was like, come on, like, you know, make something happen. I know you're a counterpuncher. You know, you have the Cuban style, but, you know, take it to him. You know, you can still counter him, but I don't know. He was trying to stay on that counterpunching outside work and everything.
On that performance, though, I don't think Sean Porter is going to, you know, have the title for very long. I think when he steps up and faces somebody like a Thurman, or, you know, even people were talking about him, you know, facing Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
On that type of performance, whether it was just stylistically, Ugas wasn't a good match for him.
Right.
Which I think could have been the case.
I think they knew that, though, because I think he said that in interviews leading up to the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, high risk, low reward.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, like, I don't think a lot of people are going to be jumping at the gun to fight Ugas now. I mean, they were initially, but I don't think, especially now, like, well, you know, he gave Porter a pretty tough time, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can see him calling for a rematch, but I think because, you know, the fans weren't too happy with it, it wasn't exactly a huge gate, a big pay-per-view. I can't see them, WBC, granting it.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have to work his way back into contention, either with the WBC or, you know, another title to try and get another shot at the championship. So,
yeah, he's probably going to have a tough time getting into that, but, you know, like we mentioned, with the split decision win, Sean Porter improves to 32-1, and he retains WBC World Welterweight title, which, going before the fight, he almost lost. He almost lost. And I saw all these, you know, all these articles after it, like, oh, he kept his title by a hair, which was actually, you know, as soon as they cut his hair, I was like, oh, that's going to be the title. Yeah. That's going to be the title for all these pieces. So if you guys didn't catch it, Sean, you know, at the weigh-in the day before this past Friday, Ugas made weight. I think he was like 146.6, 0.7. I don't know. He was under 147. So he made weight. He was good to go. Sean Porter jumps on the scale. He was 148.8. He was 1.8 pounds over. So they give, you know, in California, in the state of California, you have 2 hours to make weight. So they give him 2 hours. I guess they went back into their hotel room, but the water wasn't hot enough. So they were like, oh, it's not hot enough. They were trying to sweat it out. So they went somewhere else. They went to maybe like a local gym, to a sauna or somewhere. They went somewhere where there was heat to try to sweat it out. And maybe he was just moving around. And they come back and he weighs in at 147.2. So he's still 0.2 over. And then I think his dad, Kenny Porter, is just like, I don't know if it's him or somebody else on the team. No, cut your hair, because he had dreadlocks.
Yeah.
So they cut the back of his dreadlocks. Man, literally, he goes down to 146.8. And then the whole team is just excited. Like, he retained, like, it's like they won the fight, you know? But he lucked out, though, because if he would have lost the belt on the scales, that would have took away all his leverage with the other welterweights. Because right now, you know, they're going to want to fight him because he has a title. Yeah. If he would have lost that title, you know, I mean, he still would have got some decent fights, decent paydays, obviously. But I think realistically, the Porters know, okay, this title is our bargaining chip. You know, they're going to come for us because we have the title. If we lose it, we lose a lot of our leverage.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's not very pleasing on the eye. You know, his style, you know, kind of comes forward, head down, a lot of punches, just kind of like coming in. You know, that's why he gets cut so often. He's got an all-action type of style.
Oh, yeah. It's like a football player. He just kind of jumps in there.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of like a running
American
back.
American football.
Yeah, he's like a running back. He just comes in, takes a lot of cuts and bruises, kind of throws a lot of elbows. He's real rough and ready, you know, his style. So if you're a champion, he's not really somebody that you choose to face unless you have to. So, yeah, if he'd have lost the title on the scales, that would have been crazy. But, you know, another thing is, how heavy was his hair?
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't even have thought of that, you know, to think, oh, he's going to lose, what, like, 0.4 pounds?
But imagine, though, imagine how nervous they were and, like, man, if this doesn't work, cutting his hair, like, what's...
His dad went crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like, because, I mean, that was, a, you know, like, well, that's the only thing they had left to do. They lucked out, literally, by a hair, or hairs, plural. But it worked out. So congratulations to Sean Porter retaining his World Welterweight title. And really quick, who's next for him?
Ooh. Pacquiao seems to be the one they're talking about if Floyd doesn't come. I think that's a good fight for Pacquiao, you know, because of...
That would be an ugly fight just because based off Sean Porter fights.
Well, yeah, you know, because Sean's obviously just going to come forward the whole time and Pacquiao could just, if he's still got the feet, just keep on the outside. Just keep throwing punches, kind of like he did to Broner. Just don't let him set.
Yeah.
Don't let his feet set. I don't know whether that's a fight Sean Porter would want. I think maybe Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman struggled with Josecito Lopez.
I can see Thurman doing it.
I think those two matching up.
I can see that. I can see that, but who knows? Who knows? You know, I think Porter, yeah, he has a belt, which is good for him. He, you know, he's eventually going to get one of these guys in the ring, but he's still kind of the odd man out in a sense. It's kind of weird to say, but. Yeah, we'll see how it works out. But also on that card, all right, you're pronouncing this first name. Go. F-A...
I think it's...
Ajagaba? Ajagaba?
Agba? F-A Agba?
Damn it. Something like that. 9-0. Apologize for the mispronunciation. These names are getting harder and harder every week, man. What's going on here?
It's these Nigerians, Africans coming in, you know, it's...
You know, Ukrainians, Europeans, they're all coming over here and, you know, imposing on my grammar skills here. Come on. I'm trying to grow in my grammar skills, not hurt them. But, you know, he gets the technical decision in two rounds against Amir Mansour. Mansour was down twice in round one. And his corner actually ended up stopping the fight in round two. And Mansour, you know, his record turned to 23-4-1. So that was also on the card. I mean, the undercard wasn't really this. I mean, it's just admitted, it wasn't strong.
No, it wasn't that stacked. But I think he's definitely one to watch. If people maybe may recognize the name, he was the one who was supposed to fight Curtis Harper when the bell rang and Harper just turned around and got out the ring.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was the guy in the ring. He was the opponent.
He was the opponent who's claimed that they changed the amount he was going to get paid or something like that. So he was taking a stand, and as soon as the bell went, boom, off he went through the ropes.
And that went, like, viral. Like, a lot of mainstream media picked that up, too.
Yeah, so if people recognize the name, that's probably why, because apart from that, he's really been on the undercards, a lot lower down, still learning his craft. Amir Mansour, people may recognize. He's had a few big fights. Kind of started his career, then he got locked up, then he went to prison for like quite a long time, 8 or 9 years, then came back out.
He's back.
Yeah, it was a good thing, I thought, for F.A. Agbe. I thought he, you know, dropped Mansour twice in the first and then hurt him again in the second. Referee waved it off. Could have probably have waved it off maybe a little bit earlier. You could kind of see that Mansour, when he was getting back up from the knockdowns, was kind of using his feet, just trying to just kind of like literally run around the ring to stay away from him. So I think we knew quite early on that it was going to be an early night. Agbe looks good, though, especially with the heavyweights that we've got at the minute. He's definitely going to be one to watch. I think he actually does look quite skilled. He's not just a big lump that's in there throwing bombs.
Right.
Looks like he can actually box a little bit. But, you know, fighting Mansour in his like ninth fight.
Mansour's had quite a few fights.
Yeah, you know, he's very skilled. Obviously a little bit old now. I think he's like 42 or something like that.
Yeah.
Could be the last time we kind of see him, especially in... on one of the bigger cards.
Yeah, I think his time is running down here. So, but moving on, going from this Fox card to DAZN USA streaming service, who just signed Triple G today. We'll touch on a little bit later what Triple G's now with DAZN, an official DAZN
Everybody's with DAZN.
Everybody's coming on the DAZN wagon now. Not days and people, DAZN. DAZN, phonetically. From the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York. Dimitri Bivol improves to 16-0 with unanimous decision win over Joe Smith Jr. Bivol retains his WBA light heavyweight title with scores of 119-109 twice and 118-110. Joe Smith Jr., I think obviously his biggest win, Hopkins.
Yeah, definitely. Retiring Hopkins.
Retiring Hopkins, knocking him through the ring.
Yeah.
That was his most high-profile win. You know, I know a lot of people were picking Bivol to win this. I mean, Bivol's still a young guy. He's a big kid. Of course, he has a WBA strap. And he said that he's willing to move down to 168. And he even called out, you guessed it, Canelo.
It's kind of...
Which is never going to happen. That's too much of a risk for Canelo. So that's not going to happen.
I'm really split on Bill. I think that he's got a really good skill level. Fast hands, quick feet, sharp combinations, you know, dominates fights, really does. But his last few performances, it seems to me that he's winning, you know, quite well, but you're kind of looking for that. He's quite early in his career still, like you said, you know, he's young. But it's an entertainment business. We're there, and, you know, when he's winning by that much, you kind of think, all right, just, you know, step it up a little bit and let's finish him off.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, at least, you know, kind of maybe showboat a little bit, do something that's going to get the crowd on his feet, where he just kind of like, he's like, in his mind, he's kind of like, kind of safety first. Like, I've got this, you know, I've got it in the bag. I'll just see it out. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, you know, even if he stays at, you know, this weight category, 175, and like mops up, you know, gets a few titles and stuff down the line, I kind of worry that he's never really going to make the money that he can, because it's the entertainment business. No one's going to want to pay to see him just go 12 rounds, you know, win 10 of the 12 rounds.
That's true.
The whole time.
Yeah.
You know, he has the skills. I'm not saying he doesn't have the skills, but you kind of think to yourself, dude, you know, just get people out of there. He was early in his career, but, you know, his last few fights, he's kind of not struggled, but he struggled to get them out of there. Like, there's points when he was fighting Smith where I was like, we can see that your level's above Smith.
Yeah.
You're too quick. You probably, you know, he's not a small guy, but he's, you know, I thought he could get him out of there. And really, Smith was the one who looked like he rocked him at the end of, I think it was the 10th, when he caught him just at the end of the round. That's kind of thinking, you could see his legs go a little bit. If there was 10, 15 seconds left in that round, we could have been on for a bit of a shock. So I'm just hoping that maybe, you know, it's just getting those rounds in, getting the experience. You know, he is young, that, you know, maybe a move down to 168, maybe the power will be, he'll be more powerful in that division than... I think 175, maybe he knows that. Maybe that's why he wants to go down there. Is it because of the 175? You know, he's got people like Kovalev and stuff like that, where at the minute, I think Bivol is all wrong for Kovalev. So yeah. I think Kovalev's all wrong for Bivol. I think Kovalev, in his last performance, I think he'd beat Bivol.
I think it made it more interesting. Before Kovalev's last performance, where he beat Alvarez again in the rematch, and obviously he dominated him, mm-hmm. I think people would have had the opposite opinion, like, oh yeah, Bivol beats Kovalev easy. And like, you're right, I agree. And now that Kovalev comes back and gets the belt back, mm-hmm. and he dominates Alvarez, I think Kovalev might beat Bivol.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
Because I had Alvarez beat, and I picked Alvarez to beat Kovalev.
We both picked Alvarez, ridiculous.
I thought he was done. But, you know, listening to an interview with Buddy McGirt, he told Kovalev after his first couple of training sessions with him, he said, dude, he's like, you can box. He's like, I can see, just, you know, inspiring. He had him. He's like, just work on the jab. Keep it simple. Back to basics. You know, Kovalev had forgotten how good of a boxer he was, because he was just going in there and dominating people, just getting them out of there.
He was using the boogeyman that the persona that he developed. So he's like, this is what I got to do.
You know, so I think a performance like that, I think Bivol would be in trouble. So, you know, it's hard to see what he's going to do, because, you know, he actually spoke about fighting Callum Johnson. Mm-hmm. But in the same breath, he's also talking about going down to 168. So, you know.
But I think, honestly, everybody at 168 should be, you know, like, oh, man, I hope this guy doesn't come down, you know? Because I think at 168, I think Bivol becomes the best 168 pounder at the moment.
It's just interesting to see, because...
I mean, Ramirez just moved up, but I think Bivol beats Ramirez at 175 or 168.
I'm not the biggest fan of Ramirez. I think we kind of switched on that before.
I like him. I think he has potential to be bigger than he is, but you know, it's fair criticism. He hasn't fought anybody.
No.
And he had a world title for like 2.5 years at 168. He didn't fight anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, for Bivol, honestly, who's at 168 right now? Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised seeing a Billy Joe Saunders Bivol fight. That's it.
Well, the champion mopped it all up is Callum Smith.
I mean, they've talked about, you know, Cal Smith, which, you know, would
he's
be,
looking for paydays. You know, he's calling out all those retired
but
guys.
But I mean, with Bivol, but Bivol, I mean, yeah, Bivol's a world champion, but like, there's no, you know, in terms of marquee names, Callum Smith and Billy Joe Saunders in the UK would be a big fight.
They'd be big fights. I think just Bivol, though, I think he'd be kind of unknown. They did know him from DAZN.
Yeah.
But he's no Canelo. He's no Triple G.
I say you put Bivol and Triple G on the same cards.
It's like risk and reward for Callum Smith. He got all those titles. He's been calling out, obviously, you know, the bigger names, even the retired names, and Andre Ward, people like that.
Because he wants that marquee fight.
And he wants that marquee payday.
Yeah.
So.
But like you said, Kovalev after the fight, after Bivol's win, went on Instagram and, you know, congratulated Bivol, but then he called for unification. But like us boxing fans know, of course, Kovalev is currently with ESPN. I don't know if he has a long-term deal with them or is it fight-by-fight basis. And Bivol has a long-term deal or at least multi-fight deal with DAZN. So, you know, how's that going to work? Are they going to fight on one? They're both champions. You know, who has the star power more? Is it probably Kovalev a little bit more? His name's a little bit more recognized. So he might have the leverage just enough. Or is Kovalev like on a fight-by-fight basis with ESPN in terms of broadcasting rights? I don't know. But I don't think that fight happens, especially if Kovalev is on a multi-fight deal with ESPN, which he could be. But who knows? But I would love to see that unification fight. Kovalev Bivol, like you said, I'd probably pick Kovalev in that.
I would at the minute after his last performance. I think it's a little step too far for Bivol at the minute.
Yeah, but moving on. That was the main event. Moving on to the co-main, also for a world title, WBO super lightweight title. Mo Hooker had to battle on the scales as well. He had to battle the weight issues, just like Sean Porter, but he actually made weight too. I think he was only 0.2 pounds over, though. Was it 0.2 pounds? I know it was less than Porter.
Yeah, it was less than Porter, but he did the same. He ended up taking like the full time to actually to make weight.
Yeah, and then I saw pictures of it, and like he didn't really look that, you know, leading up to the fight and then the weigh-in, he looked drained. And I remember I was talking to some people like, oh, I don't know, man. I don't think he, you know. This is probably his last time at lightweight, super lightweight. You know, I think it's taking a toll on him, but who knows? But he ended up making the weight, and he also defeats LaPierre. Is it Michael?
Mikael LaPierre, I think.
LaPierre. Oh, we're getting French in here. Where's my French fries? Unanimous decision win, 12 rounds for Mo Hooker, retaining his WBO super lightweight title by scores of 119, 108. 120, 107, and 118, 109. Just like I said, he made weight the previous day in the fourth attempt and took the full 2 hours after being half a pound over. Okay, it was half a pound. I thought it was 0.2. After the fight, Hooker calls out Jack Catterall.
Jack Catterall from England.
I knew it. Who's his mandatory challenger. He was actually ringside. They should have brought him in. They should have brought him in the post-fight.
I'm surprised he didn't really, you know, just to try and sell the fight a little bit. You know, could have had a little bit of back and forth, a little bit of drama, a bit of WWE action in there.
Yeah, man, you got to sell it, especially being on DAZN. You know, you're trying to sell the subscriptions here, you know? You want people to tune in. But, you know, he's got a lightweight title, super lightweight title. You know, if these two don't fight, who does Hooker get next?
I think Hooker may move up in weight.
Well, that's what I was thinking. But if he stays at super lightweight?
Oof, see.
Who's at 140 right now?
I'm trying to think who would be a good one for like...
Ramirez? Even though Ramirez has mentioned about moving up.
He could do Ramirez. But like you said, he's talking about moving up.
Linares
would be a good fight. I don't know whether Linares would want. Is he going to go back down?
After the last fight? Cano? Pablo Cesar Cano? I mean, he did get a pretty significant win over Linares.
See that? No, Golden Boy, I think, would probably go for that. You know, try and get him in there with somebody else around that.
If I was Golden Boy, I would, and they approached me to, like, hey, Cano against Mo Hooker for the title, I would be all over that. Because Cano isn't, I mean, who knows? Maybe this that was the win he needed to propel into stardom and bigger fights, and maybe he's going to be on a string of wins.
The problem is all the people around his weight category obviously are in the World Boxing Super Series.
That's true.
If that goes ahead.
That's true.
Prograis.
I digress.
Josh Taylor, Baranchek. All those guys are obviously tied up. I can see Beltran.
I don't know, man. I just don't think Beltran has it. I think he just Top Rank's just utilizing him in their rotation and everything. I just
think he's more of a stepping zone now.
Yeah.
He's going to pass the torch to one of the younger guys, a Teofimo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing Mo Hooker and Teofimo. I mean, even though Teofimo fights at 135.
He's talked about moving up.
He's talked about moving up. That's why.
He said, was it this is going to be his last year?
I mean, like, so. I think that's an intriguing fight.
Because Mo is Top Rank? I know he's DAZN, but is he?
No, I don't think he's Top Rank.
Or is he?
I think he's Matchroom.
Just on a fight by fight basis, though.
That's a good question.
Because he came over and just snatched the title from Terry Flanagan.
So yeah.
I think Matchroom probably just tied him up to a fight by fight, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes they win and they're like, oh, you know, we'll promote you fight by fight or something like that, multi fight deal. But we'll see. You know, he's got a title, WBO. So we'll see how it goes out from there. But you know. Robert Garcia and them, you know, they trained Virgil Ortiz, Golden Boy's Virgil Ortiz, who's also at 140, and he's ranked number 9 right now in the WBO rankings.
Do you know what?
You know where Le Pierre was ranked at?
Lower, I bet.
Number 10.
If you remember when Virgil
number 10 fought
last time, he won and then said he would like to fight Mo Hooker and make it a fight in Texas.
Yeah.
Because they're both from around the Dallas area.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I would like to see that. They're both DAZN, Golden Boy, Matchroom.
Yeah, it could work.
So,
honestly, I wouldn't. If I was Golden Boy, I'd push for that. I mean, you know, I think it's time for, like, you know, people who know boxing, Virgil Ortiz for Golden Boy is one of their most talented fighters. He just hasn't, you know, been able to stick his name out there.
He's not one of those guys who, like, Ryan Garcia, you know, social media, puts right. himself out there. Concentrates on the craft more. You know, he's not one of those, you know, maybe he should. Because to me, I think, like I've touched on before, he is one of the better prospects, if not the best prospect in Golden Boy stable.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, he just the exposure, even though he has been on fights and cards and stuff like that, you know, he just, it's not there. That he hasn't reached that level yet.
Yeah, at the minute, I think you'll get there. I definitely think he's the future world champion unless something goes astray. You know, he's... When you speak to him, he's very down to earth. He just concentrates on his craft, keeps himself to himself. You know, he's not out there doing crazy things, drinking, partying, and stuff like that. So, I think he's a future world champion.
But I hope he
gets that fight.
I could see it. You know, especially if Hooker fought the number 10 ranked guy in the WBO rankings, and Ortiz is ranked number 9.
You know, because he's gone through Terry Flanagan, Alex Salcedo, and then Mecca Lapierre. So he's had quite a year.
Yeah, so there's also Arnold Barboza Jr.
Top rank fighter.
Chris Algieri's there. My man, Chris Algieri.
No way, he's in the top 10?
Yeah, he's ranked number 5. Ranked number 5. And didn't he retire for a while? And then he did his fitness thing. He was training some guys on the fitness and nutrition side. And I was like, oh, okay, he found a career. Because, I mean, he has like a master's in like nutrition or something. Yeah, so, you know, he knows his stuff. But he's back. So, ranked number 5 in WBO rankings. So, yeah, but like I said, you know, just looking at the rankings, if Hooker's fighting the number 10th ranked guy, well, he should fight Ortiz next. Ortiz is ranked number 9. He's higher.
I think that's a fight we could see. I think Golden Boy may throw a little bit of money his way, see if he'll take it. They're both on DAZN, so it's going to be easier to make than, you know, fighting
someone. I'm telling
you,
Golden Boy should be pushing that. Like, hey, give Ortiz a shot.
It's a fight I'd love to see.
Yeah.
Put that on, you know, Canelo's fight in September, whoever he fights, being Triple G or whoever it's going to be down the line.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Or maybe even have its own card in Dallas.
It could be. I wouldn't be surprised, you know. Put in Dallas, you know, a little, I don't know. I don't really know the venues out there.
But the Dallas Cowboys Training Center?
Well, that one too, but like for those, like for Hooker and Ortiz, like even, I don't know, maybe. They could maybe get some butts.
Top row.
Maybe. But, you know, I'm sure there's other venues there that could work a little bit more. More like a, I'm trying to think of one in terms of like Fantasy Springs, where, you know, if it's four, it looks good on the optics and it's still fun, but, you know, it's a little easier to sell out because it's smaller. You know what I mean? Like Ryan Garcia, like they said he just sold out Fantasy Springs for his fight at the end of the month. So, you know, when that place is sold out, it's pretty fun. Also on that card, Callum Johnson gets the TKO over Sean Monahan, who was dropped twice in the second and was finished early in the third. And Johnson was coming. Callum Johnson was rebounding from her fourth round TKO to IBF world champ Artur Beterbiev back in October. Do you think Johnson gets a fight with Bivol after this?
I think, like we just touched on, I think if he stays at 175, the Callum Johnson fight would be easy to make, both on DAZN. So, and it's a fight I'd also like to see because, you know, you've got Callum Johnson, who's a little bit more rough and ready, a little bit more the style I would like to see Bivol be. You know, when Johnson gets on top in the fight, you can see that he's got heavy hands and he goes for the finish. Whereas Bivol, you know, still kind of keeps some back. He doesn't really, you know, pounce on those openings that he sees. He's a lot more safety first. So I would like to see Bivol, you know, actually take a little bit from Callum Johnson's style and be a little bit more that way. I think Johnson, though, in this fight, you could see from early on that he was too much. Shawnee Monahan just even said he's one of the hardest punchers I've ever had.
Yeah.
Been in the ring with, including sparring. And you could see that, you know, he dropped Beterbiev, but ended up losing that fight last time in the fourth round, which was a pretty entertaining fight.
That was a very entertaining fight because they were going at it.
Yeah, and
they were going at it.
I think for Johnson, I think that he's going to have to be the bigger fights now when you're not fighting Beterbiev. Monahan was a little bit of a step down to hopefully step back up again. I don't see him really dropping back down to domestic level. So he's kind of lucky. There's actually a pretty strong division at the minute with Kovalev coming back and stuff like that. If Bivol stays in and around that area, you know, if Bivol drops down to 168, I'd like to see Johnson actually fight for his title if he drops it.
Right. I can see that.
You know?
I can see that. So, I can actually see that. If Bivol drops down to 168 and says, you know, I'm going to vacate that title and go to 168, I can see Callum Johnson being one of the fighters to get a fight for that vacant title. I could see it, you know. And they're all with DAZN. It could work. It could work.
Just pass the titles between them.
So, moving on. Fight previews this Friday, the 15th, from the Liacorra Center in Philadelphia. And once again, on DAZN USA.
Every weekend.
Every weekend, man. DAZN's coming in hot. DAZN's coming in hot. Tevin Farmer. 28-4-1 for Sejono Carroll for the IBF super featherweight title. What happens in this fight?
As much as I would like to say Jono Carroll wins, I can't see it. I think Tevin Farmer's going to be too much, too skillful for him.
Yeah, his experience is a little bit... He's got more experience.
Yeah, definitely just more experience. Much. I think he'll be similar to, you know, to Tevin Farmer's last fight. I think he'll just go in there. It'll take him a couple of rounds just to try and work out what Carroll's going to do. Kind of download John O'Carroll's style. And I think Tevin Farmer will kind of actually make it look fairly easy.
You know? You think he stops him? I think
he'll stop him, yeah.
Seventh.
I think he'll be towards the end. I think Farmer will just kind of beat him down, essentially. And I think he'll finish him around like maybe round eight, round nine. And then hopefully after that, we'll see Tevin Farmer move on and, you know, eventually we'll see the Gervonta Davis fight.
I don't know, man. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think Floyd wants him to because I think Tevin might actually be all wrong for him.
Well, I think it's an intriguing fight.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think I would still pick Davis in that fight. But I think Farmer's a live dog.
Yeah, you know, Tevin does get hit. And, it's, you know, his last couple of fights against, you know, James Tennyson, Tennyson was nowhere near that level. Same as, you know, John O'Carroll. It's just the fact that they were assigned to DAZN and Eddie Hearn's kind of been throwing them in there, I think, to make Tevin Farmer look good. I don't think they're on the same level, you know. Farmer would be like an A level and, you know, John O'Carroll's like more of a C level. You know, John O'Carroll struggled really because essentially, what was it? He had to be, was it Guillaume Fresno? If you remember, Farmer said, hey, you beat him, you get a title shot.
Oh, yeah.
And he ended up drawing with him.
Yeah.
Kind of shows the level he's at. And then Tevin Farmer probably thought, well, fuck, well, you know, I kind of wanted to fight him. It's going to be an easy win. So he's like, you know what? I'll give you a title shot anyway.
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
I mean, honestly, if I was Davis, I would, I mean, yeah, Terrence Farmer, you know, has talent, and I think he would give Davis problems, but I still think Davis beats him. And Terrence Farmer has a title at 130 pounds. Honestly, if I was, I don't know, but like you said, Farmer's technically on DAZN. Davis is with Showtime, Fox, PBC. So obviously that's the biggest obstacle at the moment. But I mean, I honestly think if they try to make a fight with them, I think Davis has the pull. Mayweather and Davis have the pull to pull Farmer over. Okay, the fight's going to be on Showtime. The fight's going to be on Fox. You know, we'll fight, but you're going to come to ours. I think they have the pull to do that, even though Farmer has the world title.
Yeah, you know, Showtime's obviously big, a big company.
Because Davis, I mean, let's be real. Davis is a bigger name.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, that's what kind of matters in a sense, you know, who has the more star power. So I don't know. But, I mean, yeah, if I was Davis, I would definitely try to make that fight, take his title, you know.
Like you said, though, it's going to be one of those, is it going to be made, you know, because you've got Cancio.
That's true.
With Golden Boy,
yeah,
is that going to be an easier fight to make?
I think they're going to make the Machado rematch right away.
You think they will?
I think Machado's already said in interviews that he wants a rematch and he's still willing to stay at 130.
He's too big for that weight.
He is too big for that weight, but I think he knows, like, well, if I get this fight, if I get my belt back, I have some leverage, and he needs to move up. I think everybody knows that, but
yeah.
You know, I think he knows, but I don't know. Moving on that card. Eddie Hearn's favorite fighter, Katie Taylor, 12-0, is also on that card against Rose Volante for the IBF, WBA, WBO lightweight titles. This is a unification fight. That should be pretty exciting. Female boxing, DAZN, throwing those females in there. Eddie Hearn's. And Eddie Hearn, you can ask him. He said in multiple interviews, multiple stories, Katie Taylor is his favorite fighter. And Eddie Hearn is Mike's favorite promoter because he's English.
Eddie Hearn, legend.
The legend. Legend number two, I guess. And also on that card, the original king. King Gabe Rosado, not Ryan Garcia.
Now, this could be a good fight.
Against Selecki. This is actually a pretty good fight.
This is the first time I think, you know, Gabe Rosado is from the Philly area, and I think it's his first fight back in his home area for 7 years.
And you got to think about 20, because Rosado's 24-11.
Gabe Rosado, though, is literally like old school throwback.
But he's fought everybody.
He, if you remember years ago, he had the chance. He was the number one, and he was supposed to fight, was it Cornelis Bundridge for the WBA?
Bundridge, I forgot about him.
WBA, WBO, one of those titles.
WBU. Anyway.
He turned it down to fight Triple G.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he was the favorite. He probably would have beaten Bundridge at that time.
Yeah.
But he was like, no. Turned it down and stepped up to fight Triple G.
You got
to
give him credit for that, man. Rosado's fought them all.
Yeah, I've met him in Vegas. He's a good guy. You
know? Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah. Like, but you got to give him. I know people look at the record who probably don't know him. Like 24-11. What? Hey, man, a lot of those losses were like to strong fighters. Triple G. Like, you remember his face after the Triple G fight, just all bloody and everything. Like, that was a dirty fight. And then Selecki, his only loss was against the Danny Jacobs, who's fighting Canelo in May. That guy's 27-1. So, you know, I think. On paper, I think Selecki's obviously the favorite. But, I mean, Rosado's shown, you know, especially with his past experience being in there with all those fighters.
And being in his hometown, I'm sure that's going to, you know, going back there after, I think it was 7 years, I'm sure that's given him a little bit of an edge, you know, having the crowd behind him, you know, probably step him up a little bit. I'm actually going to go Rosado.
You know what?
Eddie Hearn said today.
I think I might go Rosado too.
I think Eddie Hearn was saying today that the likely, not definitely, but likely the winner of this fight will face Andrade for his WBO world title.
So yeah.
If you could get any more, you know, going back to your hometown, the chance of a WBA title shot, I'm going to go Rosado. And it will be a bloody mess, as usual.
Rosado, in terms of the marquee, is a bigger sell than Selecki.
Yeah, I would say so.
So if Rosado wins and faces Andrade for the middleweight title,
mm-hmm.
I think they get more viewers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anyone's, you know, got DAZN and they're going to tune in on the weekend, this will be my fight of the night.
That's an intriguing fight.
This will be my fight of the night.
That's an intriguing fight. I like it.
Yeah, it's a really good undercard fight.
So, you know, when Rosado having fought Triple G, Jermell Charlo, Peter Quinlan, David Lemieux, I don't know, man.
He doesn't hide from anybody. That's why he's got so many.
Don't sleep on Rosado, man. Yeah. I know people, when he loses and stuff, and they're like, oh, he's done. I mean, he's still there. And
he's had a couple of fights as well. I think it was, is it Martin Murray or Matthew Macklin in England?
Oh, yeah, he did. Oh, my God. He's fought everybody.
He went over there, and there was some home cooking, and Rosado was kicking off in the ring afterwards.
Hey, but you're right, though. He doesn't shy away. He doesn't shy away. So I think I'm going Rosado. Going Rosado. So we'll see how that turns out. I kind of hope he wins, but we'll see. And then this Saturday, the 16th, probably the most significant fight to date this year.
Yep.
From the 100,000 seat stadium, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, the home of the Dallas Cowboys, on Fox pay-per-view. Not Fox people. This is on Fox pay-per-view. $75.
I thought pay-per-view was dead, Danny.
I don't know. La Jolla, Eddie Hearn, they're all saying it's dead. Is it dead? Let's see what the buy rate is on Saturday.
Just like a phoenix, it rises from the ashes.
Rises from the ashes, like Rosado, rising from the ashes. Let's see what the pay-per-view numbers let's see what they are after Saturday. IBF welterweight world champion Errol Spence, 24-0. Is he 24 or 27-0? 24, right?
24-0 with 21 KOs.
I thought it was 27. Maybe I'm wrong.
And it's also for, Danny, don't forget, the WBC.
Diamond. The Diamond welterweight title, which isn't a world. It's just, I'm not going into there. Whatever. This is for the IBF world welterweight title. Errol Spence versus Mikey Garcia. The odds when this first fight first got announced were 8-1 in favor of Errol Spence.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I checked, they were 3-1. They could be 2-1 now, but they're 3-1 now. And I've seen a lot of prominent personalities in the boxing game are starting to bet on Mikey.
Steve Kim, I think yesterday, he put one out there on Twitter saying, you know.
Yeah, he put out Mikey.
He's like, I'm putting it out now. Save it. I could be wrong, but I'm going Mikey.
You know what? And I've been going back and forth, but I'm going to try to stick with my plan, with my choice here on TLR. I'm going to try to stick with my choice here.
You've been good this year. Cancio.
I'm going Spence. And I had a conversation with somebody earlier today. We had a 5-10 minute conversation about this fight.
You were talking boxing, Danny, with somebody else?
I was. But it wasn't recorded, so it didn't count.
Okay.
It didn't count. And they weren't English, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. I talked boxing with somebody last week, so shouldn't bother you. Stop worrying about it. I'm going Spence, and I think Garcia's corner stops the fight in the later rounds.
I get some good odds on that.
Garcia doesn't get knocked out, but he starts taking punishment to the point where Robert Garcia stops the fight, throws in the towel.
I'm probably going with that, and
that's very bold because I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm putting it out there. Spence wins.
I'm going Mikey.
But you want to be specific? I'm saying that's how the win's going to end up.
I think Mikey decision. I don't think he has the power. You know, fighting Broner and stepping up and fighting Lipinets at 140, he couldn't get Lipinets out of there. I don't see him getting Errol Spence out of there at 147.
No, he's not going to get Errol Spence out of there at 147. Definitely not. I don't know. I'm telling you, I think Spence is a great big man. Technically, Spence could be at middleweight. He's a big guy. You know, he's been asked before, like, oh, would you fight Canelo at 160? Could you see that fight down the line? He's like, yeah, I'm sure we can make that fight down the line. I mean, Spence is a big guy. He could fight at 160 if he wanted to. You know, he's like the size of the Charlos, essentially. Mikey is good. He's great. But I think a great big man is always going to be a great little man.
But
I just think Spence is too much.
But you say he's great, but who's he fought? Apart from Kell Brook?
Ocampo?
Okay. Apart from Ocampo and Kell Brook, you know, he's fought, what, Lamont Peterson?
You know what, though? Like, I understand. I understand in terms of resume, especially lately, Mikey's better. Adrian Broner, Lipinets, Easter. I get it. I'm not disputing that. But in terms of the eye test.
But don't forget, it's going to be easy on the eye if he's facing.
Well, yeah.
C caliber, yeah. B caliber.
No, well, yeah, of course. But like he stopped Kell Brook. Obviously, that was the biggest test of his career. And he went to the UK and took the fight in his hometown. So I just think Spence is... somebody put it out there on Twitter. I forgot who it was. You know, they're probably going to get mad at me, whoever it was, because I think it was a media member, somebody we know. But they said, in the last year or 2 years, or a year and a half or something, Mikey's went 36 rounds or 30...
Brona...
I don't know. A ton of rounds. A ton of rounds and, you know, fought undefeated fighters, Easter, Lipinets, you know. And Spence has went, 10 rounds, 8 rounds, finding Ocampo and somebody else. You know, in terms of activity, Mikey's obviously been a lot busier and been in there with the, you know, I guess in terms of talent, the more talented fighters, you would say. So coming in with the hype in that regard, I guess you would give it to Mikey, but I don't know. I just because of that, I mean, I recognize that, but that doesn't mean that Spence still isn't good. You know, I just think Spence is, it's a lose-lose for Spence. Like we've mentioned multiple times on here on the show. Whether he wins, he's expected to win. Because if he loses, I'm like, dang, you couldn't beat a guy who came up from 135 pounds. You know, and you're supposed to be like the boogeyman in the welterweight division. You know, and if he wins, I'm like, oh yeah, well, you were supposed to win. You know, you're the bigger guy. He's in a lose-lose situation. But is it his fault when he couldn't get these marquee welterweights, Thurman, Porter, or whatever, or the just negotiations couldn't work, Crawford, he couldn't get him in the ring with him because they were like, oh, I don't know, he's a tough guy. I mean, I like Mikey. And I think the odds are a lot closer in terms of the fight now than they were before, but I still think Spence has him.
It definitely seems to have changed this week. A lot more people seem to have jumped on, you know, Team Mikey, like you were just kind of saying. Like the more and more you're on Twitter, Instagram, and, you know, you're watching the build-up to the fight, a lot more people have kind of turned towards Mikey's because before they were kind of, you know, going down the same route you were, saying that Errol Spence was too big. But for me, I just think Mikey, I think they're both very similar, actually, you know, in the way that they fight. They don't waste many punches. They've got, you know, good movement, good footwork, good timing, good defense. I would say Errol Spence probably, you know, definitely has the more power because he's obviously a more natural 147, probably even more natural, you know, middleweight, like you were kind of touching.
Or at least 154.
Yeah, exactly. But I just think Mikey, you know, he's been in with the better caliber of fighters. You know, he's definitely had more rounds over the last few years. He went 12 rounds with Broner, 12 rounds with Lipinets, 12 rounds with Easter. But I think, you know, even though that's more rounds on the body, more rounds in, you know, he doesn't take much damage. But I think it'll just make him a more seasoned fighter. I think that, you know, Mikey's been in there. He's been in these big fights more than Errol Spence has. I think, I think it'll be close and he may lose maybe a split decision because he's the away fighter. But I think he'll take it over the 12 rounds. I think just, you know, I was in camp, you know, I was talking to him, his dad and his brother, when it was talked about when he was supposed to fight Robert Easter, and his dad and his brother said, they were like, we don't want him to fight him. And I think just that,
because that height advantage was pretty telling.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, you know, drove Mikey on. He obviously thought, like, what the hell? Like, you don't have my back in this fight? And I think that, from his, you know, to prove them wrong, also, you know, to have a legacy, because this would be his fifth title in a fifth weight category. You know, he's obviously, you know, well behind, you know, like Manny Pacquiao, but touching on Manny Pacquiao, he did that. He was the smaller guy. He moved up.
Eight divisions.
You know, different style of fighter. You know, obviously Manny, you know, selected very well some of the people that he chose to take the titles from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he was, you know, was a more of a combination puncher, which, you know, Mikey isn't. But I think Mikey, you know, is definitely going to have to use his legs in this fight, you know, get in and out, because Errol Spence is the bigger, has a, you know, substantially bigger reach, and obviously has the more power, so. But I think Mikey can do it. You know, he's very, very good tactically. Doesn't waste many punches. So I think, to me, I think Mikey will just take it. I think it'll be close, But I think hopefully he should take it. But I think he definitely needs to, being the away fighter, is try and close out the rounds. You know, something that I was talking about was Humberto Soto did against Brandon Rios.
Yeah.
In the last few seconds of the rounds, just to make sure to tell the judges, especially when he's the away fighter fighting in Dallas, that, you know, hey, this round's mine. You know, do something, throw a few punches, combinations, stuff like that, just to steal it, just to put, you know, like a final seal. Like, hey, that was my round. Because I don't want it to be close. And we look back at it, you know, afterwards and be like, you know what, Mikey, I think did take that. But, you know, being the away fighter, like Sean Porter kind of just touched on there with you guys, I don't want it to be one of those where he loses his unbeaten record, loses the chance of a legacy, being a five-division world champion. I think, you know, hopefully Mikey, well, when he gets the win on the weekend, I hope that obviously, you know, people over here and people in the UK, because it's now going to be shown on ITV over there.
Danny, for free.
For free.
We have to pay $75 over here in America, too.
So I'm hoping
that... Thanks a lot, America.
That will, you know, give him exposure to, you know, people this side of the pond and, you know, over there. Because, you know, he'll be 40-0, five-weight world champion.
That's big.
When he gets that 12-round decision like I predicted.
When he gets. Mm-hmm. When he gets. So I'm going Spence. You're going Mikey. We're going to find out next week. And then really quick on that card going down, just kind of seeing who's on that undercard. David Benavidez versus Jay Leon Love. The Nightmare. Heavyweight Chris Areola versus Jean-Pierre Augustin, who Augustin is actually a part-time actor. So Hollywood, that should be his nickname, Hollywood Augustin. So if they use that, they better give us some royalties from that. And then your favorite of mine, Prince Charles Martin, is back trying to get that one more world title. This isn't a world title fight. He's up against Gregory Corbin. But Prince Charles Martin's trying to climb up the rankings again. So the Prince is back. So in 1 year's time, we're going to be talking about pound for pound, Prince Charles Martin's back. But once again, probably the most exciting fight week that we have to date, Mikey Spence. Triple G also signed with DAZN. The recent last couple of days, he had a press conference. So that's something we'll touch on next week. But just reiterating it, you're Team Mikey, I'm Team Spence. And then we'll see who wins next week. But for Michael Shepard, who's back from Vegas, he's not hungover. He looks okay today. And I'm Danny Z. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is the Last Round Podcast.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.